Good morning, and welcome to Cover Book Beat. I'm your host, Roger Nichols. Our guest this morning has been living, speaking about, and writing on relationships her entire life. Ronnie Beth Towers, a clinical psychologist of 30-plus years' experience, a former Yale and Columbia University Teachers College professor, and a regular contributor to PsychologyToday.com. Her writings have appeared in Woman's World, Huffington Post, Psychology and Aging, as well as USA Today, Wall Street Journal, and National Post, and Reuters Health. Her latest is Miracle at Midlife, a transatlantic romance. And instead of writing about other people, this is a memoir chronicling her own transformative two-year courtship. We're very pleased to welcome Ronnie Beth Tower. Good morning.
Good morning, Roger. Thank you for having me.
You know, in writing something so intimate and personal about your own life, did you find yourself retreating to the detachment of your profession as a way to get some distance and perspective on the events?
No, absolutely not. The psychologist in me is throughout this book, but I wrote it 100% there. I didn't write it until after I retired.
Ah, okay, because that's one of the things we should mention, that the events you write about took place, I believe it starts in 1996.
They did. They took place 22 years ago, and it's been 22 absolutely amazing years. The book just covers the first two of them, though, when my whole life changed.
Now, in the press materials, you describe the David of 1996, when the narrative begins, as the loner, a divorced American attorney living on a converted barge amidst the beauty, freedom, and pleasures of Paris, and yourself as a responsible and overextended professional haunted by earlier loss and trauma. How would you describe the two of you now?
Absolutely amazing. We are aging, and we still have people come up to us. We have recently, I was doing a talk for Lamaze in Florida, and a woman crossed the street to ask if she could take a picture of us because we give off something amazing. It is 22 years later, and every day is a surprise, and the love and the gratitude we share, it just lights up us and lights up our world.
Mm-hmm. You write that my story is less about the healing power of love than it is about the powerful forces of destiny, the way our lives push us toward lessons we need to learn to become the people we're meant to be. That seems to imply faith in a purposeful universe, which to many people feels more chaotic than planned.
I know, and my life has been about discovering that what I thought I could plan was not going to happen because the universe had, or God, if you will, had other ideas for me about what my life was supposed to be about and just kept showing me.
At one point in the book, you described David as, and I quote this, a sophisticated hillbilly. Did he agree with that description?
That was his. He loved that. It was, that phrase was given to him by a friend of his from college. His friend lived in Switzerland, gave him that label, and David loved that label.
Ah, that's interesting. And would you still describe yourself as my overly conscientious East Coast American self?
No, I am much more balanced. part of the huge gift of this relationship has been to give me back the brat I talk about in the book and the woman I talk about in the book and the other parts of myself that had been submerged while I was being very responsible.
Yep. Being very responsible, it can get tiring after a while. Absolutely. I understand that. This book is, by the way, full of insights and observations that I found fun as I was jotting some of them down as I was reading through it. And you mentioned, for instance, traveling as a single woman, you want to pack light because you want to be able to manage your own belongings. And that's something I would never have thought about, but I'm glad you have it in there.
I love it. And the little red calico case that I took on that trip in 1996, when I do talks at libraries or bookstores, I bring it with me to show people I still have it.
That is great. You still travel as lightly, though.
I still travel lightly. I'll go for a month on a 22-inch wheelie.
Wow. Congratulations on that. One of the other bits that I really enjoyed was you said at one point, I slowed down to let my attention be drawn rather than directed. That's an intriguing insight there.
It's been one of the most important things I've learned in my life is to stop trying to run the show, to stop trying to control it, but to see where I'm being drawn, to allow the universe to bring something to me instead of just me acting on it. to allow myself to receive instead of just give.
Hmm. And that's apparently worked out rather well for you.
Oh, it's been just wonderful, because when I follow those instincts, I still have to have my judgment mm-hmm. about, is this really a good idea? Mm-hmm. But those impractical, one of the great lessons of my life has been that my best decisions have not been particularly practical.
That's you mentioned that in the book, absolutely. And it... Well, and you mentioned some of the things you thought were very practical, you know, like cross training in immunology, or
epidemiology, public health.
Yes, right. Thank you. It has not turned out to be necessary or beneficial in the long run, but it sounded like a good idea at the time. So it's hard to tell in advance.
No, it actually was wonderful, because that was what helped me. After David and I moved back to the United States, that's what helped me get the job and teach intelligently at Columbia.
Ah, okay.
So that was my whole second part of my professional career, was this specialty in relationships of older married couples, and of being able to understand that kind of research, whereas my earlier research, I'd been a clinician all the way through, and I'd focused on stories, individual lives, people's, their own histories, and what they learn from them.
Now, obviously, you're talking about, I guess some people call it second chance love, and that is a very real thing, and I speak from personal experience as well.
Oh, I love it. Do you?
Yes. I lost my first wife, and that happened 22 years ago, and I'm celebrating this fall 20 years with my second wife. I've stolen fire from the sun twice. It's been wonderful.
It's absolutely amazing. Did you find in the beginning that you, like I, were afraid of loving because there was the possibility of loss again?
No. Actually, slightly. Well, it was only the background figure, but the main thing was that I had such a wonderful relationship, I could not stand to be alone.
Well, that's wonderful. With your first wife?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. So you understood the miracle of sharing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely, totally. And the intriguing thing about it is, and there's somebody's written a book called Lost and Found Lovers, in which they find that people who not in as in your case, but in people who go back, the people they knew when they were young and separated for many, many years and come together again, have an easier time of it because they already know the background and they're comfortable with people.
Right. One of the bases for relationships is having shared history, having mm-hmm. borne witness to each other's experiences. Mm-hmm. And in a funny way, David and I did that because we had both discovered Paris when we were young. And whereas we weren't together when we were young, our lives followed that parallel discovery and falling in love with Paris when we were both in 1963. Had we met then, though, we probably wouldn't have even looked at each other.
Yeah, isn't that the way it goes too? Yeah. But obviously it's been working out so well for you since that time. Do you every now and then call up the your friend that suggested you get a hold of this guy and say thank you?
I say it in my heart every single day.
That
every day in my heart, I am grateful.
When how long did it take you to put the book together? Was this a tough write or an easy write?
Writing it was easy. Writing it was very easy. Publishing has been a whole other thing because I was a psychologist. I didn't know anything about the publishing industry. Mm-hmm. But I'm a writer. I've always been a writer. I just wrote what I was publishing was science, mm-hmm. not my personal stuff, but I love writing more personally now.
Are we going to get a follow-up book on this?
The sequel is in the drawer because by the end of the book, I had a contract with an agent, so I have written many, many chapters of what would be a sequel, and they're just sitting in the drawer ready to be dug out.
and polished up and finished off and sent off. Maybe. What kind of reaction have you got to this, not only from the public but from the family?
Oh, one of my greatest joys was my daughter's reaction. And someone asked her that at the launch, and she said, "I am so proud of my mom for telling her story."
Wow.
And that was just absolutely precious. My kids could not have been more supportive. They're really wonderful, and they're great about me being involved in this whole new activity. But I guess it's because they see the second empty nest coming as their kids are growing and going to college, and they're grateful I have something I'm doing I love.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. I discovered very late in my life that I'm pretty decent at interviewing authors, and it's wonderful to have something that you go, oh, this is cool, a new talent or something. But the reason I love interviewing authors is you're all so passionate about what you do.
It is a passion. It is a form of love. And one of my messages is love comes in many different forms. It's not, it can be love for your work, a passionate love for your work. For me, it came in the form of a puppy. It came in the form of a cottage. It came in many different forms. Almost as though I was being tested, did I really understand loving before I got David? Mm-hmm. And then I got David. Whoa. Miracle at Midlife really is about the miracle of that kind of love at midlife.
Now, it was not... It's beautifully romantic. I found myself, and I'm pretty romantic guy for a guy, and I find myself drawn to this whole idea of a houseboat in the middle of Paris, beautifully appointed, with paneling from a 200-year-old Dutch church, and I wanted to be there and say, hey, this is pretty nice.
Oh, it was just amazing. The green velvet curtains, and David polished the brass and the wood, and there were flowers in the summer, and oh my goodness, it was very romantic.
and I think part of that comes through is how thoughtful he was, and all of the interesting things, and having communicating by fax, because that was the day and the technology at the time. But the fact that he immediately responded after your visit the first time, and obviously wanted to continue this.
Oh, he's amazing. David does details, but he knows which details to do. And it was the details, like having Cut 16 on Barbra Streisand's album playing on his car stereo when he picked me up at the airport when I came back to France. I mean, my goodness.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you are a huge Barbra Streisand fan, too.
He was what?
You mentioned that you were a huge Barbra Streisand fan, so he nailed that one.
Oh, he did.
Yeah. And all the way through it, he seems to have that thoughtfulness and the ability to look ahead and plan things. As you say, detail works very well for him.
He did that, but he also has always had an amazing ability to be in the present moment. And that, I think, is what helped us manage the long-distance relationship aspect of this. We had a long-distance relationship across an ocean for 2 years. And when we were together, it was so precious to be together that we wanted to be in the present moments. So part of, I think, the magic that helped us be able to do it was we were in the present when we were together. And then when we separated, we processed what had gone on.
Uh-huh.
Because there's a lot of going on that has to happen in a relationship, especially when you meet each other in midlife, and there's a lot of history. And there's a lot of unknowns, the things we needed to learn about each other. We kind of did that in the spaces, and that was what enabled us to build the trust that was necessary as a foundation, especially for me.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to be able to trust him in real life, and that took time.
Yeah. Well, as you reveal in the book, you've had some rough goes with previous marriages and a loss, particularly of Stuart, that is still painful, I suspect.
No, every single day. I think Stuart looked down and saw me lonely, and he had to find the perfect guy. That's what I think happened.
Cool.
And when he found the perfect guy, first he gave me Luke, because he loved dogs, and when he saw how much I loved Luke, my puppy, he said, I got to find a guy for this woman. And he found David. So I think every single day he is smiling.
Oh, that's a wonderful thought. It absolutely
is. It is, and I actually felt like I was writing the book with him sitting on my left shoulder saying, look, I gave you a briefcase and a bottle of perfume. You know how to do this.
very well said, indeed. What when people get done putting the book down at the end, what do you hope they take away with them?
One of the joys of publishing this book has been the range of takeaways that people have actually had. Mm-hmm. What I had hoped they would take away is that love is real, and it's never too late, and it comes in so many different forms, and that we come with this higher purpose. But they've taken away things like, I need to get on a plane and go to Paris. Francophiles love my book.
Uh-huh.
They've taken away... One woman said, relationships are a lot of work. Well, yes, they are, but they're totally worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Other people have taken away, now I understand what that work has to look like. Others have taken away, I get it. There's a we, and you have to nourish the we.
Yes.
Even more than you have to want to nourish the me or the you.
Yes.
It's understanding that we is a third entity that you have to nourish. Mm-hmm. And those are some of the key takeaways mm-hmm. that people have thanked mm-hmm. me for uh-huh. after they've read my book.
Uh-huh.
Miracle at Midlife is about those ordinary miracles that we have every single day when we're able to love someone.
That is beautifully said. I'm afraid I have to run away and do some other things at this point, but I really want to thank you for the extraordinary book that is Miracle at Midlife, and thank you for being our guest this morning. Our guest is Ronnie Beth Tower. Thank you again.
Roger, thank you so much. Find it at www.miracleatmidlife.com. You can read lots more about it and see pictures of us.
We'll do that for sure. Thanks again, and be well.
Thank you very much, Roger. Have a great day.